This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary. With Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
Hi, folks. Welcome along to Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. How are you? I hope you're well. Listen, we're double dropping bonus episodes of Soundtracking this week as first Max Porter and Killian Murphy, and then composers Jeff Barrow and Ben Salisbury join me to discuss their brilliant new film, Steve. Steve has been out in cinemas for a limited release, and it's now up on Netflix for you guys to watch as well. It's written by Max and based on his novel Shy. And the interesting thing about this is that in the novel, so Shy is this character, this kid who goes to this school, and Steve is the teacher. And in the book, Steve's only kind of mentioned a couple of times. The main focus and the point of view is from Shy. But for the film and the screenplay, they decided to kind of switch the focus. So the kind of main character is Steve, whereas Shy is still a prominent character and a very important character and played brilliantly as well by a fantastic young actor called Jay Lycurgo. It's just a really interesting concept in terms of the book started off this way and then how they've kind of flipped it. It stars Killian Murphy as teacher Steve, and he's a teacher at a reform school who, I mean, he's got so much going on, and I don't really want to kind of go into details about it because I feel like the journey and the immersive experience that you have, you're pretty much with Steve the entire time. And the pressures that he's faced with regards to trying to keep this place open, the struggles of trying to deal with these students, you know, who are going through all kinds of issues. But the belief that he has in the school and these kids is extraordinary and so powerful. And then he also has his own stuff going on as well. It's a really, really brilliant film in terms of it's a fantastic, accomplished piece of work. But I also think it's a really important film in terms of you know, shining a spotlight on those teachers that we really take for granted and those special people like Steve who kind of put themselves so at the forefront of establishments like this school to try and save them, to try and keep them running, to try and give kids that go to places like this an opportunity and a voice and a place where they can learn and grow and find themselves. The music in this film is incredible, not least Jeff and Ben's score. Big thanks to Jeff, Reg and James at Invader, by the way, for sneaking us a copy before it was released today so that we could get ahead on the edit for the podcast. We genuinely love those guys, and we will be hearing from Jeff and Ben a little bit later on. But let's kick off my chat with Killian and Max and a cue from the film Agony.
Thank you. I was going to say, today's a really... There must be a little bit of a hangover from the festival at the weekend of being here to talk about your film. I heard it meant amazing.
Yeah,
it was
good, wasn't it?
I had some friends who were there who had a great time.
Phenomenal.
But I did like 18 gigs in 4 days or something.
What?
Well, because the point is we have a residency and we all live in a hotel and I write things for people. And I write them in advance. And then when you're in the room, people go, oh, apparently you wrote something for such and such. Go on, give me something. And then they all get sung back to you. And then they say, well, why don't you come and read it at the gig? And then... like at 1 a.m. on the Thursday night, Efterclown came over and said, we want something. And I was like, I don't know how much I've got left in the tank, lads. So I ended up opening for Efterclown. That's how this festival is. You just...
Beautiful.
It was magical, wasn't it?
It was pretty special, yeah.
DJ'd on the Saturday.
I saw that.
Yeah, it was good crack.
So it's good to have this kind of other side hustles going on.
It's a total hustle, yeah.
But I wondered if there was an element of... writing the screenplay for this almost kind of connected to that in a way, in terms of writing for something and for someone. Obviously the book Shy, and this character is very kind of not referenced that much in the book, but kind of re sort of purposing the story from a different perspective with Killian in mind for that role.
Yeah,
was that
100% kind of... you're right at it. That's my mentality. The trust economy. Here, have this, play with it, take a bit. You know, like when I'm writing lyrics for people, I don't write song lyrics. Yeah. I just respond to the music and they take a little bit of it, drop a little bit. Sometimes they read the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like Kate, this is the kit. Kate was like, I'll just read it. Read a page of A4. I was like, oh, well, we could edit that if you want. She's like, no, that's great. So this is the thing. We have an existing relationship. I'm really interested in trying to write for someone you know really well and what kind of pressures that will put them under, especially because we wanted to write about a person under an extraordinary amount of pressure, personally and politically and professionally, and also from within. So utterly bespoke for you, but very much connected to previous work we've done, growing out of it. I love that. We're just following the thread, aren't we? And that's what trust between collaborators enables.
Who started the idea of this particular project?
It was an ongoing conversation that started from our first collaboration, and then we just became friends through that. And it's just a constant, you know, the way you can just share music and books and everything so instantly nowadays, and we have a lot of shared interests, and it just kept kind of rolling over. You know, Mary Hickson, who's like the heart of that festival in Cork, you know, she's very, very much part of the work that we do together, and then it kind of rolled over into the idea of maybe, you know, Max hadn't written a script for a feature film, and could there be something? Like, I'd read Shy before it came out, but I never anticipated or even thought that it could be a film.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until we began to move into that world of maybe it's about a carer or a social worker. And then Max was, I remember the phone call. and he remembered that character. Mm-hmm. Of course, I had forgotten in the novel. And then just swung the light around to shine it on Steve, and the script happened really, really quickly, and then...
And I wanted to write a script, because people keep on adapting my stuff, and I'm like, yeah, have it, don't worry, I don't want to write a script. And I was like, actually, I do. Like, you should try everything once, right?
Yeah, definitely.
It'll be more than once.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I saw the film a while ago and then saw it again recently, and it stayed with me between those times of kind of staying at it. It's,
oh, good.
The film is incredible to watch, but I think it's a really important film as well, just in terms of... Both my in-laws are teachers, were teachers. My sister-in-law is currently a teacher and stuff. And I think that there's we take them for granted.
Yeah.
And I think that the film does so many things with regards to that world of how much people give themselves to, you know, for others in a way. Why did you want it to focus on him, and why did you want him to be a teacher?
Well, I guess it had to be the world of the novel and... you know, the responsibilities that come with being a head teacher, headmaster. My grandfather was a headmaster. Both my parents are retired teachers. So I'm very much a product of that world. And I didn't, of course, appreciate any of it growing up or have any interest in what they did, or other than say, that's exactly what I'm not going to do. But now I now have deep appreciation for what they did. And then I keep saying this, but the idea of being in front of loads and loads of teenagers all day long, and then coming home looking after your own teenagers for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
It's just mental, really. Yeah. And that rolls over the whole, no wonder, like, they need holidays. You know what I mean? It's insane. Anyway, so that was very important to me. And then what Max talked about in terms of putting characters under pressure, that's like, I just adore that. Because for me, like, a drama really comes from a crisis. No matter how tiny the crisis is,
yeah,
it's always from some sort of crisis. And then you can explode up to something huge or make it very minute. And this is quite, in many, in sort of, I suppose, in movie making terms, quite banal what's happening here. But thematically, it's vast.
Yeah, it's and, powerful though.
Yeah, and that's, I think that you could mine real, real drama from that, from this character. And then Max's kind of brilliant idea of like piling stuff on him, also to put it in one day, so that piles it on for the audience as they're watching it and experiencing it. And it keeps on turning the screw on these characters. And then, you know, Shy is having his own terrible day, but they're existing kind of around each other and they can't reach each other. Mm-hmm. So it's just a fantastically structured idea. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do hardly any preparation other than like just throw myself into it, just to be buffeted by what was happening and just to be responsive rather than having any set idea of how I was going to do the scene.
And I guess that was helped by the fact that you shot it in kind of chronological order, so you're kind of like, you're able to absorb all those things as you're kind of going through reacting. Them. As
well. And we lived with the lads for a week and a half before we shot.
Wow. Yeah.
Just doing exercises and getting familiar, and I'd be writing them new dialogue, and then we'd be filming the interviews, and then we'd be like, we could use that. And the kids would be like kicking off in another part of the school, and we'd be like, they're real. They're hunting him through the school, you know.
Yeah. Jay's amazing.
Unbelievable.
You know, Shy. They're all just in. Where did you cast them from? Were they kind of just, I mean, it's the most extraordinary collection of young talent in there.
Every one of them. Yeah. Jamie's phenomenal. I mean, Riley's phenomenal. Tuck is incredible, yeah.
But this just shows you how many brilliant young actors there are out there. There was a massive casting.
Yeah,
I think 3,500 kids. Oof. Tim saw tapes of. Robert Stern cast it. We kept, you know, narrowing it down. And then when Jay read, it was just immediate consensus. His dad, I don't know if you spoke to him, his dad works in, like, alternative education.
No.
Runs a school for excluded kids. And
wow.
Which
his dad's amazing.
I ended up having a Zoom with his dad and him, like, after we... It was, like, total serendipity. So he grew up with that, so it was wild. Yeah.
Jay's the sound was off on my laptop when I saw Jay's audition tape, and I started crying, and rang Killian and said, "Well, it's in, isn't it?" Oh. But just from the way he went, he sort of guarded, but then there was a little twinkle of mischief, and then he put his hood up and was like, "I can't, I'm not doing it." And I was like, "Oh my god, that is Shy."
So also one of the other things I love about it is the, like, music, and it's brilliant. Like, I just spoke to Jeff and Ben, who love. Yeah. And, you know, they're so great because it's like, we didn't think there was much needed for it, kind of thing. And it's true, because it really made me remember that idea of like being that age and kind of like locking yourself in your room and cranking it up, and it kind of feeling like your room was full of friends, but it was the music, and you felt kind of that you'd found your tribe, even just in listening to one song from someone.
Oh, it's hard to explain.
Yeah.
Like, if I ran into Fotek, I'd he'd be like, "Back off, dude." But I'd have to say, like, you literally
saved me.
Carried me through.
Yeah.
And I was on my own in the world of your production and your beats and what felt to me like a new frontier.
But you capture that. Do you write that in the script? Was that all the drum and bass stuff?
Yeah, every single tune is specifically
mentioned it. And actually, one of the reasons I put Kruder and Dorfmeister deep shit in at the beginning, because it's one of the greatest tunes ever, but also because I had a really cool physics teacher, Mr. Anderson, I think his name was, a real dude, and he used to make me mixtapes. And he was into that kind of, like, he got me into Pharoah Sanders and, like, Thelonious Monk, but then also Courtney Pine. And then I was getting into hip hop. And then we were like, well, look, our worlds are meeting here, because it was the sort of birth of the sort of trip hop moment. And then when, you know, those early Metalheads records came out and stuff, we were both like, a new era is upon us, me and my physics teacher. You know, and I was totally shit at physics. So he was like, okay, enough now. Periodic table. No, that's chemistry. That's how shit I was in physics.
Can you relate to that element as well?
I was consumed by it, like, back in 96. Absolutely consumed by it. It was the only thing that was of any importance to me really back then.
Do you think that's the point of our relationship, is that actually we both should have been musicians or want to be musicians?
Yeah. There's still time, guys. There's still time.
Yeah. We are pleased to announce today.
Yeah, headlining the Sounds from a Safe Harbor Festival next 2026.
But every generation will have that version of it, you know? And if but Max said something really smart as well, because he was saying that, you know, there's a 30-year gap and the 90s all of a sudden are so fashionable and cool. Yeah. And if only we had kept our 90s clobber for our kids now. But we threw it all out. So there is a kind of a cyclical thing where you give it 30 years and the music and the clothes are all of a sudden everybody wants to wear, the kids want to wear them.
It's weird, isn't it? Because we were so tribal. You know, you see a metal kid coming down the road a mile off, see an emo kid, you see a junglist or a skater or whatever it is. Like, my mate was just like, you could, from 30 yards, he was Speed Garage. With his bomber and his record bag. But that, because those tribes are now manifesting, we're styling ourselves, kids are styling themselves entirely online, but look almost identical in the real world, so-called real world. It's so interesting to have these sounds back.
Yeah.
You know, my son is saying to me, you know, we're sharing hip-hop tastes. He's understanding that production techniques from the 90s are coming back into contemporary hip-hop in a way he really likes. You know, it's the most, well, the reason it's in the book, and I'm so pleased it's maintained its strength in the final film with Ben and Jeff's help, is that his pain and his depression and his uncertainty are absolutely organically tethered to his joy.
Mm. Mm.
And that what that music creates for him is simultaneously a refuge and an escape and also a clarification, you know, of the fact that there is uplift.
Yeah.
There is joy, you know.
I really love the simplicity of the world without technology as well, that we kind of get reminded of.
Mm.
There's something almost kind of really beautiful in that, you know, in terms of like, you're not kind of swayed by things or kind of tempted by things. It's just there's a really lovely purity to it.
They're very with each other because there's no phones.
But yet, the same stuff is still around. The same stuff existed then, exists now. It has always existed, you know. And we rightly put an awful lot of the blame at social media and all of that. But it was always there.
Yeah,
it's just now it's. It's like exacerbated or
different
magnified.
Teeth,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Just what you were saying there, isn't there something beautiful in sharing music with your kids, though? And a shared experience of watching music.
I
went to see Tyler, the Creator, with my son, and I think he's more excited than I am about the Radiohead gigs and stuff. It's amazing. It's like finding kind of common threads with each other is so beautiful, you know, when you sort of feel what you're like constantly searching for those things that you have in common that you can have conversations about, and music.
It's music.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, particularly for me, my son being into hip hop means the world to me because he's learning about what you learn about America and the West and the ills of the West. You know, the evil empire, the death industry of American inequality and violence and masculinity through the lens of intelligent hip-hop and what it means, what the diaspora is and how sounds travel and how different musical traditions come in. You know, my son is coming down to me and saying, have you heard the new Kendrick? He's sampling like weird bossa nova shit. You must love that. And I'm like, I do love it.
And then he goes,
he's really clever because then he goes, tickets are on sale for Kendrick and Cole.
You mentioned Sims as well. I mean, it was funny, Ben and Jeff going, we didn't know it was horror, first of all.
That's what Ben told me in the film.
Yeah.
They were working on the film for months.
And then
someone
said, going to get Sims to do a song. And they were like, that's cool. Why Sims? And they're like, because
isn't she phenomenal?
Oh, my God.
And isn't the tune just to imagine how I have to pinch myself, right? I wrote a novel about a depressed teenager who the people around him want him to hold on. Don't leave too soon. And he's got a backpack of rocks on his back, and his one true love is drum and bass. And now we have that tune in the world. We aren't we just?
It's because when he wrote the script, Max said, and Sean, imagine when you get Sims.
Did you?
Yeah.
I wrote it with her in mind, but only because I kind of needed someone that had that kind of introvert, but also like incredible strength. Mm. But also, like one of her cut interviews, you know, I wrote them all these interviews, and her one at the end of it, they go, okay, enough about work. Tell us about you, what you're into. And she just goes, music. And then just lists. Oh, yeah. Like
Barrington
like
Levy, obviously, yeah. like bit of UK hardcore at house, and then a bit, you know, like she's just,
yeah,
she's so perfect. She is it. She is Shola, and I think her performance, to have that performance and now this tune, we just feel like the luckiest people.
She's extraordinary.
Outside, out of mind, out of time, out of love. Out of breath, out of body, out of friends. I can tell that you don't get out as much. With these rocks on your back weighing you down, cause you feel all of you is not enough. You're out of touch and out of sight, out of mind, out of time, out of love. Less is more unless you feel that you're lesser than the rest. You think that you're out of clutch. Out of money in your pocket, raging doesn't stop until you let the demons out your closet. They out to get you cause you're putting out a message. Like say the response won't affect you. Out of respect you say you're out of sight, out of mind, out of time, out of love.
Well, what was the casting of process for that? You know, did you go hard with it? For
Shola?
Yeah.
No, we just sent her the script and, you know, hoped that she would say yes. And she did, like, straight away, and couldn't believe it. And then she came in and just absolutely...
I don't know if we're allowed to talk about it. I'm sure we're allowed to talk about this. She filmed her scenes. You know that extraordinary scene where she's trying to break up the fight?
Yeah.
And she went off on the night after that and did the headline Glastonbury show.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
She is next.
She was rehearsing that show all through
while she was coming in.
But we were shooting in Somerset, so it was extremely...
close.
Convenient. Yeah. But
no private choppers involved. Yeah.
I love what you say is kind of the film's kind of not complete until, you know, it's kind of lived with an audience and it's been out there. It's been received, I mean, amazingly well for people. How is the film now that it's been, you know, it's been shared with the world? How does it feel for
it's
you?
It's funny. We're sort of, the ripples are starting to come back to us very slowly from people who you see in the film, like teachers and carers and social workers, it's beginning to come back to us, you know, slowly and gradually, because it's not out in the cinema till Friday, it's not on the platform till October, but yet already people are feeding back to us, and that feels really, that's all you want.
I texted him last night saying he's still awake, I just want to tell you this one thing, and I rang because someone had stopped me outside the screening last night. Two people, one who'd worked in a pupil referral unit, who said it was just, he's like, how long did you spend in one of those units to get it so right? And I didn't. So that's just a real affirmation and joy to hear. And then someone had come over and talked about their experience of being an addict and said they think it's the best representation they've seen on screen. And that is literally why we made it. And to have it going to be able to be reached by such a large number of people. And almost everyone that's come in to interview us this morning is almost like a tuning fork at the beginning of the conversation is saying, I just want to quickly say, my parents are teachers, or I used to work in this field. Because we all do, that's the point, but you'd never guess it.
You never stop as well. They never stop being teachers. They don't. John and Sylvia are like,
It's not something that you kind of announce as it. But I was in New York doing one of these junkets and four journalists in a row came in with parents as teachers. Coincidentally.
But look how we've undervalued them, underpaid them, discredited them, like how little support we've given as a family of connected, you know, professionals around the world, like the funding cuts, everything, like the mental health crisis in education now, like, you know, I talked about this last night. Do you remember Rishi Sunak did that like weird campaign and it said your next job could be in tech?
Is that our time up? I love
you
that.
You gotta keep that in.
Our next job could be in celebrations.
Yeah, our next job could be in disco. Absolutely. Well, that finishes the point better than I would have done. Yeah.
I was getting wrapped up anyway there, but.
But why
I,
not? Yeah. Your next job could be teaching. You know, I know there is a campaign to recruit new teachers and everything, but what are we doing if we are not making these people, and same as carers, nurses, midwives, palliative carers, the heroes of our society in the narratives we tell about how our society works?
Well, I think that
no new billionaires.
This is one of the many things that your film does, I think, is start those conversations. And it's a very, very important film and a very brilliant film. So,
thanks.
Thank you so much for your time.
So nice to meet you. Chat.
Yeah.
Thank you.
From the Score to Steve, that's Oxycodone by Jeff Barrow and Ben Salisbury, rounding off the first episode of our Friday Steve special with Cillian Murphy and Max Porter. My huge thanks to both of them for taking the time to talk to me. Steve is, as I said, is still in selected cinemas, but up on Netflix for you to view as well. We've spoken to Cillian on the podcast a couple of times. He is a gent and a joy to spend time with. And you can find all of those conversations at edithbowman.com. Follow us on your socials. We're at Soundtrackin' UK. And please do subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is Soundtrackin' Extra. We're going to be having a really lovely little collection of conversations with people behind this great film, which has got a kind of connection with this, you know, in terms of young people going through extraordinary things and having the people there to support them. It's a film called I Swear, and it's based on a real person and their experience of developing Tourette's syndrome as a young lad. So that's going to be up on our YouTube channel, so you can head over there and listen to Maxine Peake and Peter Mullen and Shirley Henderson and loads others. Next up, though, it is the turn of the wonderful Jeff Barrow and Ben Salisbury to discuss the score for Steve in more detail, and also the involvement of Little Sims not only in the film, but in a fantastic song written specially for the film. That's going to be coming up later. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.